I shall continue with the reading and commentary of Rolando Carafalho's Chile's Prisoners of War. It has special significant meaning to us today in that Chile is beginning to feel the disruption of the labor class, the peasantry, the campesinos, the farmers. Chile is in a bad state of economic affairs. U.S. monopoly capitalism cannot keep the lids on all of the places that are bursting at the seams demanding freedom. Chapter 5, The Day I Am No More, You Will Have to Take My Place. One by one, we trot in with our hands on the back of our heads into the toilet, past occupied cubicles, past those we are not supposed to communicate with, to our places in the third cubicle. When your turn comes around, you step in, drawing in your neck, looking for the familiar spot. The upper left-hand corner of the door should be aligned with the glass pane in the upper part of the main entrance. Once you have done that, you can see part of the neon sign over the shop between the stadium and Bernardo O'Higgins Avenue. You can see a tiny part of the street and the buses. From this vantage point, after a short wait, you can see them pacing to and fro with grave faces looking in the direction of the stadium. This is how we first saw our wives. They were looking for their missing husbands. That meant that we were being looked for by those outside. During these times that I'm having blood pressure problems, and I will come through, do not fear. I will maintain the symbol and the practice of protection. One thing I can do is read to inform you, because if I read and commented and give my own opinions, as I did earlier today for several hours, if I did this for hours, for days and weeks and years, some of you would not be educated. It's important that we feel the spirit of suffering of our comrades, some still enduring as long as 15 years of torture in Africa and Uruguay, some still enduring torture at this moment. Some have fallen like Victor Jara. This buoyed up by our spirits, those who made the discovery whispered the news to the others. Our relatives were looking for us. Our wives were outside the stadium. The same day the discovery was made, we tried to work out a kind of order of turns in using our periscope. The order was observed more or less until we had to abandon the idea. Too many people in the toilet threatened to give away the existence of our secret observation post. Our secret observation post, the only way we could see if there was any hope that someone cared. A dusk to dawn curfew was introduced, but we managed to keep our periscope secret. It supplied us with information about the outside world in the days that followed. We had spent several days and nights in the Estadio Chile, filling it to overflowing, the stands, the football pitch, the aisles, and the basements. After September 11, immediately after the military takeover and our arrest, we knew nothing about what was happening in the country, nothing about our families and friends. Those of the detainees who knew one another tried to talk, but confined themselves to discussing where and when they were arrested, or when they were moved to the stadium. We had been brought to the Estadio Chile from many different detention concentration camp centers, where many detainees and the bodies of those killed remained, their stench-ridden bodies, unmoved, even being eaten by maggots. We had similar stories to tell one another of what had happened to us on September 11. Some of the memories I have from other readings that I will introduce in this commentary, but most of it's very, very precise that this writer gives. We had similar stories to tell one another of what had taken place on that awesome September 16, how our places of work had been surrounded by troops and carabineers, how they had pacified us with artillery fire, how the doors had been torn off their hinges, how they had ordered us to put our hands on the back of our heads, come out and lie flat on the pavement face down, how they had stormed and wrecked everything and combed the area, how they had killed those who failed to respond to their first order to come out. USA Green Beret, Chilean secret police, both under the hire of USA monopoly capitalists. Barbarous fascists from North America that rule the world. How they had searched the rooms looking for so-called caches of arms that they knew did not exist, which they could later use to justify their takeover and the killings. How later men and women had been packed into army trucks like so many bales of maize, then ordered to disembark outside regimental barracks, where the first interrogation and means questioning sessions had been conducted, and the detainees, the prisoners, detainees means prisoners, subjected to new humiliations. Everyone had been asked the same question, who hid the arms and where? The operation mounted by the military dictatorship, put in power by fascist USA on September, had a parallel aim, a joint aim that is, to stamp out potential pockets of resistance in the capital's industrial districts. Looking at the workers in overalls, we could guess at the scope and significance of the wave of wholesale arrest. The Estadio Chile was packed full of detainees or prisoners in a matter of 3 days. Even at the early stage, we realized that those who could not be kept in the overcrowded detention centers, concentration camps, were taken to the Estadio Nacional, industrial workers and other inhabitants of Santiago, the once beautiful capital that had been purified of its slums, health clinics in every neighborhood provided by the wonderful sensitive president Dr. Allende, who had been elected by the people on a Marxist socialist platform. But now, the other inhabitants of Santiago were picked up by their arresters in their homes and were bundled off during the massive campaign of wholesale arrest. And Santiago was a city that looked like it had been worn torn in shambles, like a Berlin or Warsaw in World War II. We were hunted by one question, haunted by it, I should say. How far would the disturbing developments on the eve of the military takeover or coup be allowed to go? The students who, like us, were sitting in the stands around the stadium before they were taken here as detainees had given up their free time each day to help get wheat to the flour mills and take the flour to the bakeries. Santiago was in the grip of a paralyzing strike by lorry owners, taxi owners, that had been supplied with CIA money to conduct their taxi strike. The highway running to the ports of San Antonio and Valparaiso on the Pacific coast, as well as the southern and northern sections of the Pan-American Highway, were cut off for all practical purposes. The columns of lorries, those are taxis and truckers, whose owners remained loyal to the popular unity government, could only break through to the capital, provided they were accompanied by soldiers and groups of armed workers. The enemy was trying to literally starve us out. That's why CIA money was poured in to the Truckers Association, who had not really been trade union leaders at all, but part of the military bosses and also under the direct pay of the USA CIA. The workers who formed the bulk of the prisoners at the Estadio Chile had actively fought sabotage groups and strikers who were backed and egged on by the right wing. Santiago was almost entirely paralyzed. Transport was at a very grave standstill. The workers, however, were not deterred. The right wingers and their accomplices provoked disturbances and rioting in downtown San Santiago. After dark, they cut Provincia Avenue with a barricade of burning automobile tires. Remember the cities and places in Chile. All this is a part of the comprehension that we must develop. As I said, if my throat is so terribly sore and I continue to talk, please listen. You will be required to know this information. The hospitals were able to carry on only thanks to the self-sacrificing efforts of the doctors and junior medical personnel on the side of the left forces. The unauthorized strike by the medical profession resulted in many deaths at the ambulance stations and maternity homes. Much of the medical association was being paid off also by the CIA to conduct disruptive terror. just as the American Medical Association in the United States, the doctors are the worst fascists on earth. Insensitive, all they care about is a dollar. And that's why 19 of our people arrived here, now 21, who had cancer and had undergone medical exams just 2 weeks earlier. But the doctors didn't take time to find out what was wrong with our people. For the poor, the strike was tantamount, equal to premeditated murder, and the doctors knew it. The right-wingers, the fascists in Congress and in the Supreme Court, tried to cover up the terror that had been launched. With much talk about the Constitution, in the factories and plants, the workers, overcoming physical exhaustion, worked in three shifts. Production was kept going and distribution went on much as usual. So on the surface there was a spreading mist of chaos, while beneath it the workers calmly got on with the job. How long we would be able to hold out in these impossible conditions, and from which quarter salvation would come, we did not know. While we were trying to sort things out, the military decided to strike. Soldiers burst into factories and plants looking for non-existent arms. The law and control over the possession of arms was a legal cover-up invented by the right-wingers in Congress. The right-wing, as you know, Newsweek and Time magazine has said, are taking over the United States rapidly, too, in Congress and amongst the people. The law and control over the possession of arms was a legal cover-up. And that thing, that same cover-up, is beginning in the United States, registering of firearms. And immediately exploited by the right-wing leaders of the military dictatorship of the coup or takeover. Step by step, they seize control of the key positions in the country's armed forces, ousting the socialist and liberal patriots in the forces. They sowed confusion among the workers, disorienting them. Getting them confused, that means. They befuddled the minds of their fellow servicemen, urging them to revert, go back, in that is, to the infamous, horrible tradition of persecuting and killing of the poor. The Putschists, P-U-T-C-H-I-S-T-S, were careful to draw a line of distinction between those in military uniform and their fellow countrymen in work clothes. Armed forces personnel, whose supreme commander-in-chief was the President of the Republic, guarded the parking lots full of idle lorries, trucks, idle because their owners were on strike, backed up by CIA money. Some of them got nothing for it, too ignorant to realize that they were playing into the hands of the U.S. imperialist in North America. Instead of making them put their lorries or trucks to work, instead of commandeering them as they should have done, complying with their duty, they guarded them. Yes, that is exactly what happened. And the Putschists, the military Putschists, were gaining ground, those that wanted to overthrow the socialist democracy, winning the upper hand like card sharps playing mock cards, like swindlers, gangsters, skillfully shirking their duty. That's why we do believe that those who recommend as a Red Brigade that you have to have activism, cannot believe in democratic change, shall it prove that you cannot work within the system, because Marxism was clearly elected. Dr. Allende was elected on a Marxist-Leninist platform, but a pacifist one at that. The people supported him. They tried to bring change by gradualism and democracy, and that is revisionism. It will not work. The so-called institutions then of communism, the great liberators of communism, should have been in Chile, but hesitant because they thought it would bring a nuclear war. Perhaps that is why the Soviet Union has become so active in Africa and Cuba also. If they had only come then, Cuba, Soviet Union, Albania, some of the braver of the communists, could have saved the day. Now we look around us at bruised and blood-stained faces, turning our eyes from left to right. By the way, that was my opinion that I just gave. Looking for all the world like so many animals before being driven to the slaughterhouse, the exhaustion of the last few weeks was nothing. Our black and blue bodies, beaten to a pulp, do not worry us too much either. Cut off from the outside world, cast down, anonymous, that means unknown, nobody cares. Blacklisted, whitelisted, we would say, we have been plunged into oblivion, to being unknown, that means nobody knows, nobody cares, like those who remain lying in the streets, bayoneted to death, are killed in regimental barracks. That is why what we saw through our periscope filled us with hope and courage. Someone began quietly whistling a hymn, which was a favorite with us, the day I'm no more, Victor Haas, you will have to take my place. And although we have been knocked off our feet, and our places in life and at work are now vacant, these fleeting shadows appearing through the periscope fill us with a longing for life, with knowledge that they are there, looking for us, waiting for us, and we come to life with them. By the way, not nearly all, not by any means half, said what they would do in the case of something happening to us, a white knight. Are the remote possibility of something happening to the leader? But some of you are indeed brave candidates. You are truly members in spirit, decor, and spirit of the Red Brigade. Young and old, don't meddle with this great institution of Jonestown. It's not social imperialism. We have revolutionary activists here who have some very remarkable plans. I was reading different ones. Young, black, Mary Touche, Mary Cheddarweather, Wesley Breidenbach, Yvonne Morrison, on and on. I could just name them on and on, black and white, with all kinds of intricate plans to make a lasting stand against fascism. But they were coming to life again. I don't know that it ever really pays to come to life, and this is the office speaking. You've got to endure life and take it one day at a time. Enjoy every moment. Last night when we were in the pavilion, my blood pressure was 280 or something like that, over 140. I heard the chirping of the crickets and the frogs, and I thought, this is a treat. Only once in a lifetime would some people be able to enjoy this, and we take it for granted. The chirping of the birds in the morning, the rising of the sun, the glorious setting of the sun, the trade winds that always are breezily flowing, the beauty, the utter beauty in our land, even if it's trusted for just the moment, what a challenge. But they begin to come to life again as they look out. Our wives and friends, our companions in life. For many years who shared the days of starvation and strikes with us, and our modest family feast, and holidays, they are out there acting, doing something, fighting for our release. They are also threatened with imprisonment, but they are not deterred by U.S. imperialism and its military junta in Chile that's cooperating with this bloody terror and murder. They carry on with grim determination to secure our release. They gather together at the approaches to the Estadio Chile, the second half of September. The Cordilleras tower above the pall of smoke from fires started by the Air Force, all U.S. airplanes, tanks are strategically positioned in downtown Santiago, soldiers in armored carriers patrol the workers' suburbs. Any passerby is a suspect, and suspects are brutally seized and arrested. If their behavior in any way leads their captors to think that they are trying to escape, they are shot immediately. The pavements are strewn with broken glass, brick, and other debris. The asphalt is ripped apart in places, and it is stained with blood everywhere. A roar of engines barking commands. I suppose that stain with blood doesn't touch you, but what if it was the blood of your grandson, your granddaughter, your daughter, your child? What if it was your companion? Think about it being your blood. Was stained with blood, a roar of engines barking commands, broken furniture, and smoldering bonfires of books. Cause every time fascism takes over, even as it did in USA under Senator McCarthy, all books on socialism, all books on black liberation, all books that cause you to think must be burned in giant book burning, great book burning episodes. That was what happened in Nazi Germany. You saw the films. The country is paralyzed at a standstill. Every condition has been created to give the military a free hand. The military, who are obsessed with one idea, to hunt down the civilians. You remember the army was tricked into even fighting the war. They thought they were being invaded by outside armies. Just as Germany was tricked in getting into the war. The war that started fascist aggression against Poland. Oh, how tricky the leaders of fascist governments are. In Hitler's Germany, you remember, they dressed their own secret police as Polish, put them in uniform, attacked a radio station, then later killed their own Polish soldiers, dressed their own secret police that had years given service to Hitler, as the Gestapo killed them, not before the German radio, and killed their own people in the German radio station. And of course, the last broadcaster from the German radio station on the border of Poland said, "We are being attacked by Poland." And thus the mood was set for Germany to back Hitler. And yet there was more protest against Adolf Hitler, who was a dictator, in Germany than ever was known in USA. For 7,000 German mothers and wives laid their bodies down on railroad tracks and had to be hung in public square, trying to resist the war because they smelled that something was rotten in Denmark. Yes, their duty now, the military tricked into thinking they were fighting a war against an outside military force, was to hunt down the civilians, their own fellow countrymen. An earthquake of quite a different nature is now ravaging the changeable beauty of Santiago, the bloodstained, tiny part of our planet spinning with a rumble every now and then on its journey through the universe. 2 days after the military coup, that means takeover by the military, taking advantage of the few hours during which the curfew was lifted, the wives of those missing, or perhaps they were already widows, left their homes in search of their husbands. They asked their next door neighbor to look after their children. They went straight to the nearest police or regimental barracks. They asked questions, made inquiries, but got no answers. They were rudely pushed out without explanation. Two or three of them stopped frightened. They drew their heads together. They say there's a mortuary over there. That means a funeral parlor. They say there's a hospital here with a morgue. After conferring briefly, talking together briefly, they decide where to go next and set off, keeping to the route mapped out. Other regimental barracks, police stations, majors and lieutenants, endless people they see. The women aren't allowed to move as a group. If two of them walk side by side, it's a group, and that's a crime by law. It's a crime if a group meets in any military takeover. By the way, under Senate Bill 1437, it's already a crime in the USA. A crime if a group assembles outside any governmental office. That's where we are in USA today. And there didn't even have to be a military takeover. There didn't even have to be a military coup. But if two of them walk side by side, it's a group. And they go singly from one end of the city to the other, from south to west, from north to east, all over the city. Walking is very tiring. Public transport, with few exceptions, is not running. It takes a long time and not a little effort to reach one's destination. There is firing going on in the center and in the suburbs, but even holding a baby in arms, and there are such among them, the women reach their destination. Luckily, they can do a part of the journey by bus, where they can get together and exchange news. They are chased away from everywhere. They walk away and look from a distance. They stand waiting. If they see a man in uniform, they violate the ban and ask him questions. Some of them are beaten, others are arrested, while still others get shots in the air for a reply. But they keep coming. Nothing deters them. The towns, the cities, the villages up and down the country are filled with undiminishing sorrow and mourning. We saw one such scattered group of women through our periscope walking around the Estadio Chile. The following day, the crowd was visibly bigger, and the soldiers began dispersing the women, wielding rifle butts. Some of them fell down, writhing on the ground. And when the soldiers got tired of beating the women, beating them again and again, they went back to where they had been and stayed there, asking, "Is he alive? Where is he? What for? My husband is no criminal. When will you let him go? This should never be. There should be no begging. There should have been screaming demands and acts of terror. But unfortunately, in too many socialist countries, women are kept unliberated. All they know how to do is to be a passive extension of their male. If they had really cared, and that's why you husbands should encourage revolutionary women, fighting strong revolutionary women, instead of some that sneak around right after women's revolutionary socialist movement and shack up with a man without being cleared. We know what goes on in this committee for the defense of the revolution. You would not like the kind of women you're creating, the women who do not have enough spine to even stand up and fight, for most of them did not. Most of them did not take plans of action. They should be trained militarily. We should incorporate our women in SAT. We should incorporate them in munitions control. We should incorporate them in every measure of defense system. Stephen had in guerrilla fighting, it should be reinstituted, reinaugurated. We badly need to have women who have certainly been used to suffering trained, because they can endure, along with some of the men, the few that have given up their chauvinism. The soldier with his steel helmet on is not aware of this. His job is to carry out orders. He is not even hearing the cries of the mothers, the cries of the wives that should have been fighting. But even he gets tired from the unceasing moaning and groaning going on around him. He steps back only to hear his superiors remind him sharply of his duty to chase them away. Soldiers holding their rifles atilt charge the crowd of women. The women run away screaming, falling and struggling back to their feet. Typical of the unemancipated women in a democratic situation. Chile should have had a revolutionary takeover, as Jim Simpson said last night. It should have been out of the barrel of the gun, and women should have been emancipated from this role of screaming and looking so passive, as so often is the case. And right here we have that disgusting behavior. Too weak to know how to do anything. Yet we've got some tough women here. Some of the toughest suggestions that came. Some of the wisest plans. By God, I want to see every one of you with a plan of what you will do if you face death, and how you will face revolutionary death, and what you will do if necessary to die for the revolution. The soldiers fire in the air to frighten them away, and it succeeds. Sometime later, the women reappear timidly, one by one, stopping a short distance away. They again shout their questions. This is what you get, gentlemen, when you keep... crazed, desperate women ends with the onset of the curfew, only to begin or resume again the following day. As the days went by, more and more women came to the stadium, each time getting closer to their goal. Silently, grief-stricken, more and more weeping widows returned to their homes, others not knowing whether their husbands were alive or not, and if so, where, upon discovering one more detention center, one more concentration camp, went straight there like so many bees to look for them for days, weeks, and months. That's beautiful, but they should have been doing counteraction. They should have been revolution, rebellion, taking place in every part of every industrial suburb, all throughout the cities of Chile. Then something could have been done about their husbands that were being tortured in the jails and in the concentration camps. We can be strong if we are educated in military warfare and give away visionary concepts of idealistic socialism, as some. Some said, I want to write a book. Oh, some of the stories that I read. If a revolution comes, I'm afraid of death. Give me something that I can do to live. I don't know how anyone could remain in Jonestown with such feeble hearts. It was rumored one day that detainees or prisoners were being kept at the Estadio Chile. After all, a thick ring of guards around the stadium was confirmation enough. Neither bullets, nor water cannon, nor arrests, nor beatings could keep the women away this time. They left only when the stadium was cleared of all prisoners. In fact, the stadium was being prepared for a fresh batch of detainees, while those who had been taken there right after the military takeover or coup were shifted to the Estadio Nacional. But the swelling crowd of irrepressible women took them several months, but they finally got hold of what they were dealing with, then laid siege to that. There were so many and so active that even the pit combat troops on guard duty, over the 30,000 POWs, lost the initiative and beat a retreat following a series of vain attempts to scatter the surging crowd of besieger women. But where did the women get this strength? From each other, being separated from the so-called men in their lives for several months. Driven by their strong ties to their near ones, the women sought out concentration camps and besieged them. Excuse me, I have to delay the moist in my throat from time to time. Later they organized motorcades and went to Chacabuco. They were refused permits to enter the area. Their trips to Antofagasta and beyond into the Pampa lasted for weeks. They did tens of miles on foot, literally hundreds in some case, heavily laden with bundles of clothing and food. They should have gotten some gasoline and other things. Heavily laden with bundles of clothing. For weeks they sat under trees in Puchuncavi, P-U-C-H-U-N-C-A-V-I, waiting for permission to speak with the inmates of Melinka, M-E-L-I-N-K-A. They showered the guards outside the Quintero Air Base with questions before they got permission to enter Ritoque, R-I-T-O-Q-U-E. In Punta Arenas, A-R-E-N-A-S, they doggedly pressed for the ban on passage to Dawson Island to be lifted. They never lost hope. To begin with, they secured permission to have notes passed to the inmates. Later, they demanded permission to send letters. Still later, they fought for visits and finally for their release. Now, what if they had had some gasoline? I wonder what would have taken place. This would have been too much for the Chilean people. The Latino, and all over America, as far as that goes, all over the world, the males are chauvinists. But if the women had suddenly resorted to violence, I mean real physical violence, no doubt it could have even emancipated Chile. In Talcahuano, T-A-L-C-A-H-U-A-N-O, in front of Quiriquina, they formed silent and obstinate queues. That means lines. They stood patiently for long hours on the piers of Valparaiso, out on the port, looking at the Lebu, L-E-B-U, which had been converted into a floating prison, with holes packed full of prisoners being tortured. They acted in the same way everywhere. At Rancagua, R-A-N-C-A-G-U-A, Temuco, T-E-M-U-C-O, Linares, L-I-N-A-R-E-S, Copiapo, C-O-P-I-A-P-O. They surrounded the stadium at Concepcion, C-O-N-C-E-P-C-I-O-N, which, like the one in Santiago, S-A-N-T-I-A-G-O, had been turned into a prison. Regimental barracks, police stations, and prisons all meant the same thing for the thousands upon thousands of these heroic women. They turned for help to the priests in their parishes. They spoke with bishops and were received by the cardinal. The churches gave them some refuge. The church was initially on the side of the military takeover, but when it saw its bloody work, unfortunately, liberals always have to learn the hard way, and that's the point of the Red Brigade. They feel it's the only way you're going to solidify, bring together all people of the working class is by causing the police state to really show its ugly, fascist, murderous terror. They tried to comfort them without asking their ideological affiliation, as the church used to, because the church refused to accept anyone in its parish under Chile's government before who were communist or socialist. They were seen as the defenseless and persecuted women they were, and a helping hand was extended to them. The first group of women to obtain permission to visit the Chacabuco concentration camp on Christmas Eve 1973 was accompanied by nuns and priests. All along the way to the concentration camp, the monasteries and convents gave them shelter. November 4, 1973, just about 3 months after the terrible military takeover by U.S. imperialism through the Chilean armed forces, marked a major victory. Permission to visit the inmates of the Estadio Nacional, and so the silence of isolation to which tens of thousands of detainees, among them hundreds of women, were condemned, was broken. The military junta, J-U-N-T-A, which means dictatorship, thought they knew Chilean women well, but they were mistaken. They did not. The unexpected, a collective hysterical outburst, an epidemic of fainting fits. And they were even preparing to turn the emotional explosion to advantage. Orders went out to set up Red Cross tents, complete with stretchers, and to set up TV cameras to broadcast far and wide evidence of their humaneness. But contrary to their expectations, as all men expect women to behave in certain roles, the women had gotten together, and that's why women need to be in the Women's Revolutionary Socialist Movement, and get your asses together. The women had gotten together, the women swallowed down their tears and kept a good grip on themselves. They never complained during the brief meetings with their incarcerated, imprisoned husbands, that means. On the contrary, they encouraged their husbands and even tried to laugh their sorrow away. Crowding together outside the fence, they saw their near and dear ones for the first time after a long separation. Remember, brother, if you don't want your wife to speak back to you, you won't have this kind of a woman that'll stand up and fight for you when the time comes. She'll be passively moony-eyed, looking at some other man the moment you're gone or sick to take your place. They had agreed among themselves, these women, to fight for permission to see their husbands as frequently as possible. Until that day, they have looked at the stadium from the street, listening to the loudspeakers as the names of those who were called in for questioning were announced. They saw the few who were released as they ran along the wide streets, oblivious of everything and giving nervous replies to the questions. Members of the junta who had no principle but thought of themselves as machismos, real sexual objects, said they couldn't expect that their women would fight for them in this way, and no doubt they wouldn't, because the women were standing up for men who at least had some measure of socialist principle. And some of you men better realize that that's what it's going to take to keep any kind of companionship in the long run. Again, this is my commentary. When the women came in to the stadium, they were frozen with horror when they saw their husbands, sons, fathers, fiancés, and brothers crowded together behind bars, looking like the inmates of a monkey house. But the women overcame their initial shock. They were strong now. They made no mention of the dirty and torn clothes, or the cuts and lacerations and the black and blue bruises, or about the gray hairs that were not there only yesterday, or about the gauntness and bruises all over their body and even their faces. In a calm voice, they talked about their difficulties and the most urgent problems. When they left the stadium, they waved goodbye with upraised arms, with a fist of international working-class socialist solidarity. For several hours afterwards, an almost palpable sense of their presence lingered on. That means the palpitation like the pulse beat of a heart. The Red Cross tents were not needed, neither were the stretchers. It was only when they reached home that night that the women gave way to their emotions. When the husbands had disappeared, the daily bread had disappeared too. A sense of impotence, that means an inability to do anything. Our inability to help our families back home was enough to drive us mad. Our women exerted tremendous efforts to keep things going. Those who had been working before the coup were fired after it. They had to take odd jobs selling fruit in fruit stalls, peddling bread that they made at home and pies for sale, or selling some kind of sweets. They had to stretch their ingenuity to the limit to provide food and clothing for their children that were near starvation. Such help as they got from neighbors was very welcome, but of course it was not enough. Such help is tremendously appreciated, but of course it cannot become a way of life. When a child falls ill, its mother sells the TV set, and later the watch and the record player to buy tickets for the children who want to see their father in a concentration camp miles away. Their wives send food parcels to her husbands to keep him going physically, and so the flat becomes denuded, the apartment empty. That means empty. I'll try to explain words so you can increase your vocabulary also as we read. The apartment becomes empty, denuded, as one by one the various articles are sold. She tries not to miss a single visiting day. And if your children have not been thrown out of school, they bring you their best gift, good marks in the day book. Homes gradually became empty. the absence of the men and disappearance of things like bookshelves and tablecloths, standard lamps and curtains make a once cozy home look bigger and colder and colder. In the end, the family have to part with their home and move into a single room, or to relatives able to take them in. Some even have to move to the mountainsides and hover in rocks for comfort. The agonizing disruption of life, and the main thing, the absence of her husband, turned the wife's sorrow into hatred, a feeling at once alien and revolting to her, and the image of womanhood that is promoted all over the world. We are told about all the things our women are doing. Women's solidarity unions are at long last finding a sympathetic hearing and are getting cooperation. The officials of various government departments to which the women turn for help gradually cave in to their entreaties, their demands, and do what they can to help. Other news reaches us. The junta, that means the military dictatorship, has begun reorganizing the country's economy in its interest. The signs over the nationalized enterprise. That's why I say nationalization, as I gave in an earlier documentary on Marxism that the Communist Party USA is recommending, is no way a substitute for expropriation. Expropriation means taking over the means of production and the means of distribution and distributing them to the people, not the state, because a capitalist state cannot be trusted if it nationalizes its industries. The surplus value of the labor go to the technocrats, like we have some of that even here in Guyana. The signs over the nationalized enterprises are being torn down and replaced by the signs of local and international private companies. With the return of the former owners to the factories and plants, the overseers again become part of the workshop scene. If on payday any worker dared to protest against excessive deductions, large amounts taken out of his paycheck from his pay, he would brand himself thereby as a radical extremist to be put behind bars and tortured at once. To those who had fought against the impending, that means the coup that was coming, that they saw coming, and called for vigilance, that means some strong will of fighting against it, this came at no surprise. Those who had remained indifferent to the alarming events on the eve of the coup, the takeover by the military, by the direction of U.S. imperialism, Kissinger had just come days before for the President of the United States and given $9 million to have President Allende murdered. Those who had remained indifferent to the alarming events on that eve of the military takeover, or who had actively encouraged them, had a rude awakening. They were coming after them, too. As it was with a pastor in Germany that said, when they came after the communists, I didn't care, I didn't like communists. When they came after the Jews, I hated Jews, I was a Christian minister, I didn't do anything. When they came after the Catholics and they came after the trade unions and so forth, I did nothing. But when they came after me, it was too late. There was no one to look after me. That's why you have to stand vigilant and not let one be taken from Jonestown, and that's why the stupid socialist and interracial groups of North America and USA should have stood together, but they didn't. And thus we are here, and thus we will stand here, and thus we'll produce this land, create margins of profit that can go to help liberation of our people there, and in ways that would make your heart beat with pride. Those lucky enough to still have their jobs have had their wages cut. Those persecuted for political reasons and the jobless are much worse off. Both categories have been deprived of their citizenship rights, and many are without any means of livelihood. This is just exactly like will be taking place under the Senate Bill 1437. This is America, just a pattern of events in USA, so listen to it. And many are without any means of livelihood at all. No way to live. Such property has escaped destruction and pillage, being torn up and gone through and had things stolen by the coup, the military, when the pushes burst into homes during the wave of wholesale arrests and raids, was later exchanged for food. All is gone now. Barely can families, mothers keep their children's bodies and souls together. All this we learned from the women on visiting days. They told us about a car mechanic who is now selling fried fish, about a neighbor who had shot himself, and about the girl with pigtails from the house with the balcony who had begun streetwalking to earn something for food because the family was starving. What they pass over in silence, we learn about from the newly arrived detainees and prisoners. They are brought to the stadium in lorry loads, truck loads, and are tortured and interrogated and questioned for hours and hours. Many of them are engaged in dangerous work organized in response to the fascist terror that's implemented by USA fascism and monopoly capitalism. We look at Chile from our prison, catching only glimpses of the life outside. Beyond the walls and the barbed wire, the cloud of dust having settled on the ruins, we are able to watch from a distance without being able to help. The formation of a pattern of actions and feelings, events and moods, which will later accelerate, that means speed up the process of resurgence, that means again a revival, a revolutionary revival, and the smiling tenderness in the eyes of our near ones is part of this process. All this we sense consequent upon the discovery we made on the first day of our arrival at the stadium. Our periscope did not deceive us, and we held bodies upon bodies on shoulders of one another to look out the dim little toilet window to see what was happening in the streets. Chapter 6, Stand by My Side. Sector 7. Over 200 prisoners are kept in this gloomy part of the stadium. On one side is a railing, on the other a long staircase leading up to the north grandstand under which we are being kept. Down below, all we can see is the tripod of the machine gun covering the exit in to the staircase. The machine gun is manned by a crew of three. On either side of the corridor leading to a football pitch are rows of toilets, dirty and filthy, which are overflowing. Looking through the railings of the fence reinforced with padlocked chains, we can see tanks and troops. The only way you can appreciate this is put yourself there or someone you love. And that's difficult for some of you because you don't know much about loving, I'm afraid. We are to spend 14 days here.